What is up, and welcome back to another episode of the Wizards Podcast. I'm your host, Greg Finberg, and today's episode, we're going to talk about a plethora of topics ranging from Bradley Beal, the former Wizard, getting bought out by Phoenix and signing with the Clippers, to AJ Johnson dropping 25 points against the Utah Jazz, 20 points against Philadelphia, and also touching on some of Washington's top guys like Sarr, Carrington, George, missing the previous two games to kind of give my take on that and some guys resting in summer league. So action-packed show, going to start it off with a little bit of non-Wizards stuff, and it's about Bradley Beal. So former Wizard for 10 years, that's kind of the reasoning that I'm including him at the top of the show. But in case you missed it, Bradley Beal, and the talks have been ongoing for a while, but Bradley Beal reached a buyout agreement with the Phoenix Suns. He gave back, I believe, $14 million in the buyout and then signed a two-year, roughly $11 million deal with the Los Angeles Clippers. So I think he's making about $5.5 million per year for the next two seasons as a player option in the second year. But that's not really what I'm here to talk about. I don't really give anything about, you know, Bradley Beal signing with the Clippers. It's mainly the fact that he got bought out by Phoenix and kind of what that means for the Wizards in that trade. Because I'll remind you, like, Washington was clowned on for making that move. The same move that netted them four swaps, I believe seven second-round picks. Obviously, Chris Paul that turned into the Jordan Poole trade, Landry Shamet as well. And all that for Bradley Beal, Jordan Goodwin, and Isaiah Todd. So, you know, the Wizards got clowned at the time. Will Dawkins and company got clowned for not getting a singular first-round pick. And I try to say that blame should be directed solely on Tommy Shepard. And honestly, also on owner Ted Leonsis for wanting to never, ever tank. That's the iconic quote, right? We will never, ever tank, which Ted Leonsis said and maintained all throughout the Bradley Beal years where the Wizards won 35 games, missed the play-in tournament altogether, and just had no semblance of success. Will Dawkins comes in. He decides to get what he can get for Beal, which at this point now looks like a pretty solid return. And eventually, Phoenix buys out Bradley Beal. And the Beal era in Phoenix can be summarized as tumultuous, can be summarized as a disaster, disappointing. You could simply just call it bad. Like, they didn't win a singular playoff game. That first year, they won, you know, nearly 50 games, but got swept in the first round. And then the last year was just brutal with injuries and all of them missing time. They don't even make the play-in tournament with that big three of Brad, Booker, and KD. It's just, it's funny, and I'm not here to take, like, a big victory lap on the Phoenix Suns. Like, I could care less how well they do. Apart from the fact that the worst they do, I guess, you know, you can if you're a Wizards fan, because those second round picks, you know, Washington owns a majority of their seconds over the next couple years. Those pick swaps in 2026, 2028, and 2030, you know, those could prove valuable down the line if Phoenix is worse than Washington. So I do take that back. It is kind of a victory lap because, you know, the Wizards did get clowned for the trade. And now, you know, obviously Phoenix is in a better spot, I think, now than they maybe were a couple months ago when they didn't know what they were doing. But certainly interesting to take a look back at that trade, you know, a little over 2 years later. And it's just so obvious that Washington won that trade. You know, if you tell me they didn't, that's just wrong. If you tell me that it's disappointing they didn't get as many firsts as you thought they could, then sure. But if you're looking at it, if you have to pick a winner from that trade, I don't know how you can sit there and say that it's not Washington. I wanted to pull this up because Varun Shankar of the Washington Post tweeted out some of the trades, some of the grades that, you know, mainstream media gave this trade in June of 2023. The Athletic gave the Suns an A and the Wizards a D. CBS gave the Suns a B and the Wizards a D. And then ESPN looks best now. They gave the Suns a D and the Wizards a B. So obviously some mixed reactions to the trade at the time. But I'd say a majority of the major news outlets sided with Phoenix in the fact that they won that trade at the time. I think if they had to regrade it, you know, the Wizards, I don't think we'd get an A+. I think they get a high B, maybe like a low A. and you'd give Phoenix like a dead F or maybe like a D plus for effort, for trying to at least do something with that third spot that they had in their big three. But it's certainly interesting. And I will say, like, Bradley Beal, the player, I don't think has been the problem. Like, his production has been good. I mean, he had 30-plus, back-to-back 30-plus point-per-game seasons in Washington. The issue was the team sucked both years. The first year that Bradley Beal had his contract, a Supermax contract, 5 years, $251 million with a full no-trade clause, kick in, the Wizards went 35-47. Like, and that was again, the year that Brad missed, like, the second half of the season. I believe he appeared in, like, 46 games that year. So again, got paid $50 million to play 46 games, averaged 23 points, which was 7 points per game less than he did the year before. I guess back-to-back 23-point per game seasons, but definitely a drop-off in production, and the team sucked. They were 35-47. The year before that, they were 35-47. The year before that, they were 34-38, yet this guy continued to get paid as a number one option. And is that Bradley Beal's fault? No, it's just, you know, Tommy Shepard offers him the contract. You can't fault Beal for signing on the dotted line. If you guys weren't that great, if you guys were good at your job, but your boss was like, here's this promotion and we're going to pay you 5 years of $251 million. Like, you're going to get $50 million a year to just play basketball the way you've been playing. We might suck. And you know, we are probably not going to ever come close to even competing for a title. But you can continue to cash your checks. You're telling me that you're going to say no to that? No, you're going to sign on the dotted line as quick as you can. So I've always, that's the one thing I've had an issue with, is you can have a problem with the contract that Beal was on. You can have a problem with the ownership that was willing to present him with that kind of guaranteed money, with the full no trade clause, the GM that was you know, willing to do that, because the Wizards backed themselves into a corner. Like, no one was surprised when they signed Beal to the Supermax, because it was kind of like, yeah, like, what else are they going to do? They could have traded this guy a year ago at that time for a boatload of first rounders and pick swaps and young talent. They didn't. He's dropped off and regressed a bit. And so now you're sat there saying, oh, like, we could lose him for free and not get anything in return. No, let's extend him. That was the issue there. Like, maybe you say, we're not going to extend you. Like, you know, let it play out. And then maybe we can trade him at the deadline, or maybe we can find a trade this offseason to sign and trade, something like that. But they backed themselves into a place where it was like, we feel like it's the best move to sign him to this awful contract. And it's a contract it's got to go down. I tweeted this out today, like, it's got to go down as a top five worst NBA contract, certainly of the last 20 plus years. But honestly, I'd argue all time. Like, I don't know if it can be top one. Like, there are some really bad, really bad contracts in professional sports as well. Like, people mentioned the Strasburg deal, because obviously due to injuries, and, you know, I believe it was, what, six starts he made since signing for all that money. You know, there's other contracts like Embiid's where it's like, you know, I get why they gave it to him. He was the MVP, but again, the injuries have been so bad. Paul George certainly looking like a bad contract. But I think Beal's ranks right up there with some of the worst. Like, the John Wall contract, again, it's not like just John's fault or the Wizards' fault. Like, he had an unreal year in 2017, but then the bone spurs happened, and then the Achilles, and then, you know, just wasn't the same. Same goes, you know, Russell Westbrook had one of the worst contracts in the league too, and the Wizards traded for that contract, funny enough. So there's certainly some bad deals. If you remember, I think it was 4 years, $64 million that the Wizards gave Jan Mahimi. They way overpaid for Andrew Nicholson. But it's certainly the worst contract in Wizards history. And I'd argue it's a top five worst contract in NBA history. The issue is basically, and I'll try to put it like this. It's like if you were paying Norman Powell, Nikola Jokic level money with a LeBron James no trade clause. Like, it's not like Norman Powell is the problem here. He's a good player. But it's just a matter of he's a good player, but he's not your elite number one option. We are building our franchise around you. And that's what they did for Beal. They gave a number three, number four option the keys to their franchise. They gave him a five-year, $250 million fully guaranteed deal after, as the number one option, he hadn't even sniffed a close to above 500 season. Nowhere close. The teams were awful when he was the number one option. And then they got him some help, and they still sucked. They still didn't even sniff the playoffs, apart from when they got in as the eighth seed. But, you know, they were four games under 500 that year. So does that even count? You know, and that was, again, that was the closest with a Brad-led team that they were to finishing around 500 or better. So, again, they gave a number three, number four option, $50-plus million, when realistically, he's probably valued at $25, $30 million. You know, maybe I can get to 35. But again, guaranteeing him, you know, close to $50-plus million in each year of that contract was one of the biggest mistakes they made. It was the end of Tommy Shepard, obviously. He got fired in large part because he made some other poor decisions, especially draft picks with Johnny Davis. But that contract was probably the main reason for them departing. And the fact that it had a no trade clause was just laughable. Cause like at the time it was, okay, you know, who's making the most money in the league? You got LeBron James, you got Steph Curry. Then you got Bradley Beal, right after Nikola Jokic. And it's just laughable. And then, oh, at the time, who are the only two guys to have a no trade clause in the league? Oh, you got LeBron James, you know, top two, top three player of all time. One of the greatest players I've ever picked up. Oh, Bradley Beal, you're the only other player on that list. How did you get here? How did you and Mark Bartlestein of Priority Sports, which, by the way, what an agent. Shout out Mark Bartlestein, because how did he get that deal done? How did he convince the Wizards to even include the no trade clause? But Beal gets it. And it's just like you gave the kitchen sink and the keys to your franchise to a player that isn't even a number two option on contending teams. And as proven, like last year on the Suns, might not even be a number three option on contending teams. So again, a little bit of a long-winded rant. And I'll say, like, it's not Brad's fault that it didn't work out in terms of the contract. And, you know, it's where, you know, the Wizards overpaid for a player they shouldn't have overpaid for because they felt pressure to do something and stay relevant. And the Suns did the same thing. They overpaid for a player that they thought could maybe complete their big three. And because they were paying a $30 million player, $50 million a year, they had no other money to round out their roster. Their depth sucked. Their defense sucked. And eventually they succumbed to it. They didn't win a playoff game in the 2 years. They buy him out. They're going to waive and stretch him. So he gets back to 14 mil. And then I think he's making 19 and a half million over the next 5 years, 19 and a half mil per year over the next 5 years, plus his contract with the Clippers. And then once he opts out, probably of that player option, could sign a pretty decent deal, I would assume, in free agency. So again, he made out pretty well with this buyout. You know, the Clippers are good. Bradley Beal is a solid player still. And I think his role there can be more suitable to him than a number one option on Washington, which he is not. So certainly interesting for Beal there. Signs with the Clippers. That's some former Wizards news. Now we can really get into the meat of the episode. And that's the last two Summer League games. You guys heard from me after the Brooklyn game, I believe, which was the second Summer League game. You know, Washington played quite well, 102-96 win. We discussed Alex Saar, 8 blocks. But, you know, unfortunately, it's the last you're going to see, I believe, of Alex Saar. You know, this happened before the Philly game, but the Wizards, and I don't want to say shut down just yet, because there's one more Summer League game. You know, some guys that haven't played the last couple games could play. I doubt they do. But if you missed it against Philly, and I guess also by the time I'm recording this against Utah, Alex Saar, Keyshawn George, and Bob Carrington were held out. And it was not injury-related for those guys. And I expected this too. I tweeted that out, that I wouldn't be surprised. I had heard from people familiar with the situation that, you know, the Wizards, you know, expected Bob and George and Saar, their second-year guys, to play the first two games and then probably not play after that. So again, I wouldn't expect them to play in the Summer League finale. But they sit out. The real, I guess, surprise was Trey Johnson and Will Riley also sitting out. Now, those were injury-related, so it's not like they were just shutting them down. Trey had a hamstring injury, they said, and Riley has a thumb injury, and Riley was sporting, I believe, some sort of cast or wrap on that thumb on the bench. But again, I don't know if these are actual, like, injuries that should hold them out, or it's more so, okay, like, they could play through it, but it's Summer League. They played pretty well in the last game against Brooklyn. Trey played really well both games he appeared in. Let's not, you know, be crazy. We like what we got out of them. Let's shut them down. Let's be cautious, because they also held them out the next game against Utah. So again, I'm not sure if they'll return. I doubt the top three guys, and Saar, George, and Carrington return for the fifth game. Maybe Trey and Riley do, but I wouldn't be surprised again if they hold them out. This kind of goes along with this theme of, like, you know, teams shutting down their top guys after, you know, one or two summer league games. Like, I get it with, like, a Cooper Flagg or, like, a Wemby. You know they're great, and, like, they've proven it because, I mean, Cooper Flagg at, what, 31 in a second summer league game. Like, you're like, okay, what's the point in them playing here? But certainly a guy like Will Riley, like, he had a good game, 16 points on six shots against in the second game against Brooklyn. Didn't have the best game the first game. Like, I think he's a guy that would, you know, benefit from playing. Trey Johnson as well, obviously, he put a really good first two games, and I'd still like to see him play. You know, it used to be these guys would always play in summer league. You know, first year, second year, you know, they'd get run if they were on the roster. And now it's kind of going to this point of, okay, we're going to injury manage even in summer league. And it's just kind of sad for the state of the game. I guess for summer league people, summer league watchers that enjoy watching, need something in the summer to kind of get them going. It's unfortunate. You know, the top guys on Washington played the first two games. It was fun. And now the last three games, they're out. And because of that, the team has been, you know, not great. They got killed the first game, won the second game. They've gotten blown out in the last two games. I mean, they were blown out against Utah. They came back towards the end, but it wasn't that competitive in the third quarter. You know, they're 1-3. They're not going to obviously be in that top four like we expected them to be if they had actually played all their guys. So they do lose at least one, maybe even two extra summer league games because of it. But I don't think they care. Like, I can see it from the approach of Will Dawkins and company. Like, you know, Trey Johnson had 20 plus points in the first two games. Like, he was great. Like, why would we go out of our way to continue to see him play the way we know he can play? Don't risk injury. Don't risk re-aggravating that hamstring, because you know that can be a pain. Same with Will Riley and the thumb. Maybe let's not push it. Let's be cautious. We're holding them out. And the plan was to always hold some of the second-year guys out, let the rest of the roster play, and see what we got with those guys in increased minutes. Like, I get that point. But I also get the point of a fan, right? Wizards fans want to watch these guys. And I know my guy Damo tweeted the GIF when he saw the starting lineup against Philly. And all five of their starters from the previous game were out. And it was like the LeBron where he leaves the press conference, kind of like, all right, I'm out. Like, nice starting lineup, but I don't want to watch. And I'm sure a lot of Wizards fans felt that way. So I can understand that frustration as well. It's kind of annoying. You know, the load management, injury management has kind of, you know, pushed itself to a point of annoyance around the league. And the fact that 18, 19, 20-year-old guys are being injury managed in summer league, when they haven't even played an NBA game, like, that is also disheartening for the NBA fan that just wants to watch their guys play and compete. But again, like, you're upset now basically probably because you don't have anything else to watch. I mean, it's baseball All-Star break too. I don't know if you're like watching the ESPYs or whatever, but there's really not much on. So WNBA actually. So if you're a fan of the WNBA, you have that. But other than that, like, not the greatest sports time. So the fact that the Wizards were going to be fun in the summer and it's kind of been a little taken away the last couple of games isn't great. But I do, I guess, understand where they're coming from. But that's kind of that point on some of the top guys sitting out. I want to talk about AJ Johnson real quick. He had 20 points against Philadelphia. He had 25 points against Utah. One of those 20-plus point games was pretty good, and one was pretty bad. And again, if you're a box score watcher, you didn't watch the games, maybe you're like, oh, like, back-to-back 20-point games for A.J. Johnson. Like, he definitely balled out. Like, really good on him. I get it, right? I really do. But at the same time, like, if you're actually watching the games and you watch the game against Philadelphia, he's got a long way to go, especially as a point guard. Like, the offense there, I think – the team shot like a combined like 5 of 34 or 6 of 34 in the first quarter. Like, it was just a slugfest on offense. Really no ball movement for the Wizards whatsoever. So, you know, and I think that's because they lacked a true point guard realistically. Like, they had AJ Johnson, I guess, trying to be their lead guard with that starting group, and he didn't make the greatest decisions with the ball in his hands. You know, I thought he got to the hole. I like the speed in transition. I like the pace that he played with. But I did not like his decision making in the slightest. You know, like, again, like I mentioned, 20 points. But he also had just one assist, 5 rebounds, which is also okay. 5-5 from the free throw line. He was also 7 to 20 from the field, 1 of 7 from 3 in 31 minutes, had 3 turnovers, was a minus 12. That's a 1 to 3 assist to turnover ratio for your starting point guard. And I do it in air quotes because I've tried to warn people, like, he could be a point guard, but he hasn't shown too much point guard skills. Like, a lot of people were saying, oh, well, like, I want A.J. Johnson over Bub Carrington after, like, the first summer league game. And, like, A.J. Johnson, the point guard of the future. Just, like, I've tried to be on this train. If you listen to the pod, you know I've been consistent with this. Like, let's slow our roll with A.J. Johnson. He's a very gifted player. He has so much skill and so much potential, but he's just not there yet. And I don't even know if he's close to there yet. So, again, I want to pump the brakes on that because I think as a point guard, maybe I can see it, but his decision-making, his court vision, that all needs to get so much better. Again, 1 to 3 assist to turnover ratio in 31 minutes as the starting point guard is just, it's just bad. And so while he can score the ball sometimes, he does get in the habit of forcing things. I thought he was pressing a lot, played better in the second half, but didn't necessarily enjoy the first half where he got into some bad spots, got caught up in the air, forced some passes. That's where the turnovers came from. So again, not the biggest fan of A.J. Johnson's 20-point night against Philadelphia. Was way more of a fan of his night against against Utah, mainly because I like the overall pace that he played with. I thought he played under control. I thought he played with a good eye for, okay, this is a good shot. I'm going to go and I'm going to take this drive here. I'm going to take this three. I'm going to navigate the screen. I'm going to find the skip pass. Like, I did think he could add way more assists if his teammates made some shots. Like, I didn't necessarily hate what I saw from him as a distributor and as a playmaker. Again, 3 to 3 assist to turnover ratio, 3 assists, 3 turnovers, not the greatest. You know, his point guard skills weren't great. If you told me that he was a shooting guard and he was playing shooting guard and just kind of had a little bit more on-ball responsibility, I would have been like, oh, great. You know, he had a great game. But the fact that I did see him with the ball in his hands a lot, he had the ball in his hands a lot. That's not to say that he didn't ever pass, but a lot of over dribbling, a lot of, I'm going to go get mine here when I thought he could have, you know, dished it to a better wide open player than forcing the shot. I certainly thought that his playmaking could have been better, but it was better than it was against Philadelphia. I'll say that. What I did like from AJ was his shot selection. Didn't force, you know, as many shots as he did against Philadelphia. Again, against Utah. Finished with 25 points, 5 boards, 3 assists, shot 10 of 16 from the field, including 2 of 5 from 3. So again, a much better shot diet for AJ, way more efficient showing for AJ from both the field and from 3-point range. Got to the line a handful of times. I really like the speed he showed in the open court. There was a play where it was kind of a D-cell where he was at full speed, got his defender to jump in the air, came to a hard stop and kind of just hit a little floater. There was one move where he got it, you know, kind of at the wing, dribbled in, had a nice spin move, got to the cup and one layup. So I did like his ability to get to the rim, his ability to use his speed and get into that second gear. Those are a lot of the things that I did like. Again, I mentioned the assist to turnover ratio wasn't great. His decision making can improve for sure. But I did think against Utah, AJ was more of what I expected from him and definitely more efficient. So I did like what I saw from the second year guard there. Let's talk about Jameer Watkins for a second. I could talk about him as the next coming of Lu Dort. I don't want to get ahead of myself. I did, you know, relate him to Lu Dort on draft night. I was really high on him in the pre-draft process, really high on him on draft night when some people, I guess, weren't as high on the pick because they wanted the Wizards to reach on a center. Like, this is why you draft guys like Jameer Watkins at 43. You don't go star hunting in the second round. They didn't go star hunting with Keyshawn George last year at 24, not the flashiest pick, but they knew he would be a very good NBA player. And he proved to be that, or at least showcase that he has the potential to be a solid NBA player for years to come, especially on the defensive end. Jameer Watkins, man, 11 stocks against Philadelphia, 8 steals, which, shout out to Varun Shankar for the stat, tied an NBA Summer League record to go with 3 blocks. I mean, that's just so impressive. his instincts on defense, his relentlessness to pick up on ball 94 feet, to take so much pride in what he's able to do on the defensive end is so refreshing and really great to see. I mean, you see it so often on these contending teams. Lu Dort, like I said, on OKC. Andrew Nembhard on Indiana. TJ McConnell. Like, these guys are just relentless defenders that know when to reach for the ball, know how to be a pest on the defensive end, take pride in that as well. And I think Jameer Watkins is a guy that's coming into the league saying, you know what, I'm going to get minutes. I'm going to stay on an NBA floor by showcasing that I'm not going to stop on the defensive end. You have an assignment. You have a former MVP. You have a number one option. My biggest goal of this game is to take that guy away. That's my goal. That's what I'm going to do. I'm going to give full effort. You need that on an NBA team. You need that on a team like the Wizards that has been searching for defensive improvement the last couple of years. Jameer Watkins, 11 stocks, is just so impressive. And if you watch the game, it's even more impressive. I think that the numbers indicate, because he got it in a plethora of ways. You know, whether it was jumping in and intercepting passes into passing lanes, whether it was plucking the ball because of his on-ball pressure, whether it was forcing a guy to dribble it off his foot or forcing an errant pass, or coming over from the weak side to swat a shot. Like, all of these things just came together. And it was really impressive to see. I also thought he played pretty good defense. Didn't have the numbers, but thought I enjoyed his defensive instincts against against Utah as well. So can he be an all defensive player? Like, maybe that's a reach at the moment. But I think in the right minutes, like, he's going to always be a really good NBA defender. Has a stockier build, so I don't think we'll get pushed around. Can guard multiple positions. I'm really intrigued by the second round pick for the Wizards. I also learned it's Jameer Watkins, I believe. I was listening to the Summer League broadcast, and they seem pretty adamant that that's the pronunciation. So from now on, this is a podcast that's going to try to pronounce his name right. In Jameer Watkins. So for Wizards fans, just a little thing to remember. I guess I can kind of go down the rest of the roster, give my thoughts on some of the other guys. Maybe giving one word. Again, I don't want to harp too much on some of the back end guys of the Summer League roster, because I think only a handful of you guys listening really do care. But maybe I'll go one word for each player and give a little bit of a blurb. Keyshawn Gilbert, fun. Like, I think he's always around the ball. He's always making plays. I really like the energy he plays defense with. Again, was like a 2-steal-per-game guy at Iowa State. He's fearless. He's a smaller player, but he's not afraid to take it to the cup. So I do like that about him. I think he's a fun player. Leaky Black, solid. Like, the shooting improved. He was like a 40% shooter from three with the go-go last year. Shot hasn't been great throughout Summer League. But again, like, he had, I believe, 11 rebounds. I'm going to try to pull up the stats from the game against Utah. But it seemed like against Utah, he did a little bit of everything except score the basketball. Again, he's 26. He's a much older player than some. Against Utah, 10 points, 11 rebounds, 4 assists, 2 steals, 4 blocks. Like, it's a pretty good stat line. 3 of 9 from the field, 1 of 3 from 3. So, like, didn't shoot that poorly from deep. That was, you know, a decent game from Leaky. Like, I don't think he's a two-way candidate, but he's a solid player. Maybe if the Wizards need a body later in the season, they can bring him up on an Exhibit 10. I don't know, but I certainly think he'll come back with a role for sure on the go-go. But he probably had his best game of Summer League, I would say, against Utah. Liam Robbins, bad. I don't want to, like, mince words here or sugarcoat it, I guess is the better term. I just don't see it with him. Like, he's 7 foot. He can block a shot here and there, but I feel like he gets caught up in the air on defense, you know, falls for a lot of pump fakes down low. I haven't seen some, you know, the best defensive rebounding from him. Doesn't really command the glass on either end. He made 2 threes. He made his first 2 threes against Philadelphia. And apart from that, has had a pretty bad Summer League, I'd say. Again, pretty slow on his feet. Can't really switch defensively, just, you know, not even a consistent 3-point shooter for someone that I could see maybe being a stretch big. I just don't think he's played that well. Maybe he's better than what he's shown, but I haven't been the biggest fan of Liam Robbins. Dylan Jones, questionable. I'm trying to search for a word because, like, he played just 9 minutes in that first game, went 0-for-2, didn't play well in Washington Summer League opener against Phoenix. Then was a DMP the following game against Brooklyn. And that was kind of surprising considering some of the guys that aren't on standard NBA contracts played way more than he did. He did start against Philadelphia. He was 2-of-2 at 5 points. Like, I thought he looked pretty smooth offensively when he did shoot. He just didn't shoot enough. Like, if you're going to start, you're going to play decent minutes, you're going to take 2 shots. Like, again, I would have liked him to be more aggressive. I think he's best when he takes it to the rim. He showcased that against Utah. Like, he had 3 really nice drives, including an and one, where he drove to the lane. You know, his outside shot did not look good. He didn't even start this game. 0-of-6 from 3, including an air ball, if I recall, was a minus 18 with 12 points in 19 minutes. So again, like, for a guy that was a former first-round pick just a year ago and traded recently to the Wizards, obviously that was mainly to get that second, I believe, the second-round pick. But he's on a standard deal. I would assume he's a roster bubble guy, not drafted by the current regime. Wizard at 17 out of 15 NBA contracts. It's like, okay, maybe he's battling with like guys like Malachi Branham and Blake Wesley for the final spot. And I mean, you're shooting 0-of-6 in summer league. You got one DMP 9 minute game the other time. You are minus 18. It's really not like you're showing you are a step above the competition there. You know, it's not like he's really showing the Wizards why they need to give him a roster spot. So again, I'm just questioning it because when he drives to the lane and he plays aggressive, I've liked what I've seen. But when he settles for these outside jumpers and really isn't attacking the paint and the rim like I think he should, he doesn't look like a player that should be on the Wizards 15-man roster. You know what I mean? So I'd say questionable couple games for Dylan Jones. I'm trying to see if I forgot anybody that played. Jonathan Pierre, like, again, I didn't think he was all too great. 1-of-6 from the field, 0-of-4 from 3, 2 points. That's just like his stats. But even watching it, I was pretty unimpressed with what I saw. Akol Dagak, let me just tell you right now, I like Akol Dagak. I don't know what it is about him, but the Wizards just seem to have success. And I was when I was doing my notes to prepare for this pod, I was thinking to myself, like, I don't know if he scored. Like, maybe he scored one or two baskets, but I just, the Wizards like seemed to always play better when he was on the floor. And then I looked at the box score and he was a plus 19 in his minutes by far and away. I mean, he was the only the third Wizard. There was only 3 Wizards that were in the positives plus minus. No one else came within 10 to him. He was plus 19 in just 9 minutes, 3 points, 4 boards, 1 assist, took just 1 shot and made it. It was an offensive rebound, I believe, that he put in for a layup. But again, the Wizards went on a 16-0 run with him on the floor. Like, again, I don't think that was all Akol Dagak, but he was a decent part of it, especially on the defensive end. So I'd say he's, you know, a solid player. That's the one thing that I would definitely point to there. Zeke Mayo, again, 11 minutes, minus 18. If it weren't for 2 steals and 2 turnovers, he wouldn't have registered a stat in those 11 minutes, took 0 shots. So again, it just seems like a guy, like, I think he's a good shooter. He showed it at Kansas, but hasn't been aggressive enough for me in summer league. Hasn't really seemed to want to shoot the ball, kind of has a pass-first mentality. Same with Kadarius Richmond. Again, 12 minutes was a plus 9, 2 points, 3 boards, 4 assists. Like, I thought he made some great plays, some good passes. He was always a good playmaker at Seton Hall and St. John's, so that's not surprising to me. But again, like, it just seems like with that jumper, that was the one knock on him in the pre-draft process. I remember fondly or distinctly, there was one play where the ball got swung to him at the top of the key, like a pretty open look from 3. He didn't even look at the rim. Like, he just swung it right away. And I think that's kind of going to be his Achilles heel until he can add a jumper. I don't know if he's really anything more than maybe a two-way guy and a G League guy. He's got to add a jumper. He's got to be confident in his ability to stretch the floor. Because if not, then I don't really know how long he can stick. But that's kind of a shorter blurb on some of basically everyone that's appeared for the Wizards in summer league so far. Back-to-back losses, and so they're pretty much, I think, they're out of the running for that G League, or sorry, for the summer league playoffs. to compete for a summer league title, get those extra games. That's the case. They have one more game remaining. I doubt Alex Saar plays. I doubt Bub Carrington or Keyshawn George play. I guess I wouldn't expect AJ Johnson or Dylan Jones to not play. I mean, they both just played, you know, 30 plus minutes in the last game. AJ's been playing well. I think the reps are good for them. So I think I'd expect them to play. And when it comes to Trey Johnson, Will Riley, they've been very cautious, I think, with these injuries. I wouldn't be surprised if they hold them out once again. Certainly Trey, with, you know, he showed enough, I think, in two games to be like, okay, we get it. You're good. You're better than a lot of the people here. Let's make sure that hamstring is fully healed. Maybe they just like do the same for Will Riley. I'm not sure, but again, I wouldn't be surprised if they held them out too. Not as fun for Wizards fans, but I do get it. Like, the Wizards organization would rather see them not get hurt in summer league meaningless basketball and rather them have a full training camp and a full, obviously, 82-game season to kind of develop, as apart from just developing against guys in summer league that they clearly think they are just better than. So that's going to kind of bring what I did want to talk about in this episode to a close. But certainly some intriguing stat lines. AJ Johnson putting together some solid 20-point per game performances. Jamir Watkins is a menace on the defensive end, so that's really a cool revelation. And obviously the opening of the pod was about Bradley Beal, kind of giving my thoughts on him agreeing to that buyout, you know, the fallout from that Wizards trade, winners, losers, all that kind of stuff. So hopefully you enjoyed a little bit of a throwback in the beginning. But that's going to wrap it up. You'll hear from me next after the summer league finale. I'll probably give some grades on every player on the Wizards roster, give kind of a look ahead as to, okay, the draft's done, summer league's done. What is next for the Wizards? Kind of preview what to watch for leading up to training camp, schedule release, opening night, obviously, and that kind of stuff. So that's kind of going to be the rest of the offseason stuff, obviously, after summer league. But be on the lookout for that. So I guess you'll hear from me in about 2-3 days. But that's going to wrap it up for this episode of the Wizards Podcast. Again, we're closing on 500 subscribers. So if you haven't subscribed so far, feel free to be a friend and hit the subscribe button. If you're already subscribed, you're the best. Thank you. And again, thanks for the support as always. Always very much appreciated. So that's going to wrap it up for this episode. Thank you always for listening, guys. Go Wiz.